O Creator, help us to hear the one name in the silence of our hearts, that the name of God may illuminate our lives in love. I give myself to this day, to the strong power of love, to the obedience of angels, and the purity of simple souls. I give myself this day to the virtues of the starlit heavens, the brightness of the sun, the whiteness of the moon, the flashing of lightning and the restlessness of the wind, the stability of the earth and the deepness of the sea. I give unto myself this day the power of God to lead me, his eye to watch over me, his hand to guide me, his word to give me speech. Christ with me, Christ beside me, Christ behind me, Christ within me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ to the right of me, Christ to the left of me, Christ in lying down, Christ in sitting, Christ in rising up, Christ in the heart of every person who may think of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone who may speak to me, Christ in the eye of everyone who may look on me, Christ in the ear of everyone who may hear me. I give myself this day to the strong power of love. Amen. So it's wonderful that I feel like I'm getting to know some of your personal stories, and getting to somewhat figure out how some of the families are connected. I just know I'm never quite sure, but it's getting a bit clearer. So it's really wonderful. I'd like to read again from Windows of Heaven, and Barbara had a great idea last night or this morning. I'm not sure when she shared it with me, but she said, because I'm really getting to know this place, and I'm really getting to love this place. And like I say, I've been praying for you all for 25 years. So she suggested that we might consider, at least for me and anybody else who's interested, going to the places where these pictures were taken so many years ago. And Eric said he would be willing to show those places to me. And if anybody would be interested in joining me, we'll figure out a time tomorrow and announce it tomorrow morning. But I personally would really like to do that. And if anybody would like to tag along, feel free. So this is actually the seventh day of the seventh week. And the title of this is called Everyone to His Place of Prayer. The other thing I realized is that every other CFO, JFO camp that I've been to, there are very few people that know about this book. And I have had more conversations about this book here than I have my entire life in CFO, and I'm just really grateful. So I think it's a powerful practice, and I love that you're kind of immersing yourselves in it. So this is the other picture. I believe this is Frank Laubach. I'm not sure. Who is it? Tony Brayton? Okay, well, so much for that. I could use that as my comic relief, couldn't I? No. All right, so this is called Everyone to His Place of Prayer. If I could find an object worthy of my utmost allegiance, writes Thomas Kelly, if I could find a mark worthy to be the aim of how of my life, I should gladly pull the arrow back to its head and let all fly upon a single shot. Did you ever thrill with the desire to venture forth with sublime audacity? Did you ever wish to bet your life on God, and yet it seemed you had no place to go and no armor for the battle? In ancient times, there was usually one trumpeter and one light bearer for each army of several hundred. The trumpeters and the light bearers stood back while the army moved forward to do battle. Now, prayer is like that. A man who prays cannot always lead in the fight. And yet prayer scatters the forces of evil faster and more completely than any mere action can do. That is the lesson of Gideon. Oh, do not be ashamed if you seem chained and impotent when the enemy approaches and darkness deepens. Just light your torches and blow your trumpets and stand every man in his place of prayer. Our dear Heavenly Father, though forces of evil are about us, and they must be legion, let thy power of love scatter them as dust before the wind. Amen. And the scripture is from the sixth chapter of Kings, verses 15 to 17. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, a host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, Alas, my master, how shall we do? And he answered, Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. And Elisha prayed, and the Lord, and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes and ask that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. I'm also reminded of that beautiful mountain Chris talked about this morning. So when I was at Pacific Redwoods a couple weeks ago and had the pleasure of working and experiencing Dana and his song leading, Bern Stanfield, who I know has a friend of Winnie's as well and has been a speaker here, I love his talks, and he actually had a song that he had us sing. And I went up to Dana and whispered in his ear this morning, and I said, do you remember that song Bern sang? Because last night after I went to bed, this melody kept coming to me over and over again. I couldn't quite remember all the words, and I thought, well, maybe God wants me to do it. And then I thought, no, I think we're supposed to sing it. So Dana has agreed to lead that for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. It's one of those that got in my brain and still isn't out yet.
Walking with you is my prayer.
I just think that's beautiful. Thank you, Dana. I actually, in my morning reading this morning, came across a question that took me aback a bit, and obviously was perfect for today and what we've been listening to. So this was the question. What if you only received today what you thanked God for yesterday? What if what flowed in today was based on thanking God yesterday? So I'd like to suggest maybe a little experiment for tomorrow. And that would be thanking God in everything we can think of for everything we do as kind of a living prayer over the next 24 hours and a practice for all of us, including my list was pretty short, actually. I knew I thanked him for my food, and I thanked him for the beauty and the people here, and I have a list. Wasn't that didn't happen, but when I really took a look at my list, it wasn't as long as I think God would want it to be, and it was definitely long. So tomorrow I'm going to do that differently. Yesterday I had a chance to walk the labyrinth, and it was a beautiful experience. I loved the peace tree, or I guess you call it a wishing tree, the labyrinth walk was beautiful. I actually design and build labyrinths, and so I was very excited to hear that one was here, and then a couple of people scratched their heads and said, well, we don't know if the grass will have been mowed, and I thought, well, that's okay, I can walk it anyway, but it was beautiful. And it reminded me, I told you I enjoy being in environments where there's a lot of diversity. And it reminded me of a meeting, an annual meeting that I go to every year that I love. And I have to give you a little bit of history about this. My great-grandfather in Sacramento County in California was the official dowser that looked for water in wells, and no one drilled a well unless they I guess people called him George, but I called him Grandpa. And at a very early age, I had the opportunity. We would go to his house, and they still had an outhouse, which I thought was fascinating. These are my memories of as a little tiny kid. I would have to drink milk that had the cream floating on top. And it would make me kind of gag, and I knew I'd get a spanking if I didn't just. He would fry a pound of bacon every morning, have three or four eggs, biscuits, do the gravy and the. I mean, it was just amazing to me. And the man lived till he was about 95, and all but about the last 2 years of his life were vital, healthy, and hearty. So there was the outhouse that was different than what I was used to. There was the milk. There was this amazingly greasy breakfast, but I got to go with him, and he would tell me how to pick out a willow branch and teach me, and he would whittle the willow branch, and he was quite well known for that. So I became very interested in dowsing a number of years ago and using some of those same skills that I had been taught, and I found out that there was an international dowsing convention that was usually held in the Bay Area somewhere, that was close enough that I could go. And again, it was one of these extremely diverse environments. It was, there were the farmers, like my Grandpa George, who were, I would say, hardy, of the earth men who showed up in their overalls and their work boots. And the first labyrinth that I actually heard about was from this gentleman I'm going to tell you about, Jim. His name was Jim, and he actually used a bulldozer and built mounds with this bulldozer and this backhoe. And so it was like, this is what you call a labyrinth. I'd done some work with Lauren Altrus and the project that she has at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, and taken a number of her classes, but this was quite an experience. So the reason I'm telling you this is Jim stuck out to me very much so in this crowd. First of all, there's the farmers. The second thing, let me finish my thought here, sorry. There are the, what I would call sort of metaphysical, airy-fairy in the nicest way, I'm not being critical, people that use dowsing for other things. And so there are these two very extreme, one very much in the ethers and one very much in from the earth. But they get together and they share their wisdom and their knowledge. So it's great fun. And it's actually quite something to look at in a conference room. But this was a very quiet, very wise man. And I would have to say, of hundreds of thousands of people I've met in my lifetime, he was one of the most spirit-filled and loving people I'd ever experienced. He was a man of very few words. I'm not even sure he'd finished the eighth grade. The farm in his family in Iowa had been in his family for generations. And one year I went, and my goal was to get to know Jim. I like to ask wisdom-seeking questions, and I'll usually start with a little curiosity. So I wanted to know more about his farm and his labyrinths, and we moved through that information. And finally, I said to him, I said, "Do you go to church?" And he paused, and he said, "What do you mean by church?" And I said, "Well, know, like Sunday service, anything, give me a hint." And he said, "Well, I go to church every day." He said, "There aren't any walls. I go to church every day." Okay, didn't quite answer my question. I got what he was saying, and I said, "Do you believe in God?" And he said, thought for a very, very long time, and he said, "I really don't know. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that." He said, "But what I do believe in is doing good, and that's just one more O. And I've been doing good my whole life." And it struck me as one of the most loving, simple, powerful ways to express his love in the world. I also had an opportunity to go to an Easter retreat. Every year I designed a little personal silent retreat for myself. And I would go to a monastery in the Big Sur Mountains that looked over the Big Sur coast on California. And I'd spend 4 to 6 days, depending on how much time I had there. And it was an order of brothers, and there were about 30 of them, and beautiful church, Catholic church. We were able to rent cells, and that's literally what they were. But this had been there for about 100 years, and so this is a place on the top of the mountains in the redwood forest overlooking the Big Sur coast, and it just really fed my soul. And one year I noticed that there was this very humble woman and her husband that were living in a little trailer next to where the brothers lived. And there aren't a lot of females around there except those of us that go there for silent retreats. And so she struck up a conversation with me, and she said, "You know, tomorrow's Easter, and I'm, you know, I just live in this little trailer." She was French. Her name was Therese, and she spoke very broken English and was very self-conscious about that, and very self-conscious that she too didn't have a graduate degree, and she truly felt called to feed. She was the cook for this community. And she asked, there were three or four women, and she asked all of us if we would come to her trailer for an Easter celebration after the church service. And we did that. And she had baked this braided bread, and she had colored some eggs and put them in there. And she had created this very simple service about using the egg as the idea of birth and what we would bring forth into this coming year. And it was all but probably 30 minutes. And again, it was probably my most powerful Easter experience. I'll tell you about another one that was a personal one in a minute. But God, I think, speaks to us in very simple ways. If we can just get out of our minds and really be with each other and what we have to offer. So another little bit of spiritual wisdom. I told you a little bit about teaching these young 20-somethings in the Forest Service, management, communication, conflict resolution. And we do a Myers-Briggs typology kind of thing so they can learn a little bit more about who they are. And there's a nice little piece to that for those of you that have done that, that is about your shadow, taking a look at your shadow, the dark side, the one we don't like to admit too much. And so as my way of kind of helping these folks along, now picture this, right? Mostly wildland firefighters, males and females these days, which is nice, all who want to fight fire, all who have been going to nothing but how to put out fire classes and how to drop whatever from the sky. Their supervisor tells them they have to go to a week-long supervisor's class. So none of these folks are happy to be in the room. Not only that, I don't fight fire, so they have no idea where I came from, and they are ready to have a bad time. So that's part of my fun with all of this, because the more resistance there is, the more ability that I have to work with that, if possible. And by the end of the week, it's the best class I've ever taken, but there's a little bit of angst as we work through that. So as I was trying to very tactfully to describe to this room things about the shadow, what happened was this captain raises his hand, and you could tell he's only there because he's making his guys come, because his supervisor's making him come. And he says, well, I would say that just a little differently. You meet three jerks in a day, check the mirror. I like that because it's one of my spiritual truths. Now, I've had a lot of people in my life who I would think jerks, and I noticed something fairly early on, and that was that they kept appearing. They had different bodies and different sexes sometimes. They were different people, but I had some of the same issues. And where this really hit home, and CFO was a part of this, was that one of the things that happened through a very difficult divorce was that I no longer had to deal with my mother-in-law. She was a very difficult person to deal with. She did not think I was good enough for her son, and even 20 years later, it was still a problem. And I, of course, being a new bride and wanting to do everything perfectly and wanting everybody to like me, just did not understand, because in my life, most people like me. I'm very spoiled. And so she was kind of the bane of my existence. And I learned a lot over time about that. But there was a bit of relief. That was one of the things I could be grateful for. However, the following year, after much consensus, it was determined that I would co-chair the council ring for CFO with another woman who I knew, been to camp with, really enjoyed. And we would walk through this year together with the council ring. I'd chaired camps on my own. I chaired camps with two other people. We do a lot of co-chair stuff in California. But I started off just like I'd started off any other leadership role, with prayer and all of that. And about 2 months into this, I realized that I was dealing with the same issues I had been dealing with my mother-in-law, only it did have another face. And so I think it's really important to Angela Zarian, who I mentioned last night, talks about if something shows up at your gate three times, you're supposed to open the gate and let it in. And I look at how many times in my life I actually create resistance around that. And that experience with my former mother-in-law was really, really true. And I found out that it's not until I really learn to love the people I have the most difficulty with, and it's not easy, and I don't do it perfectly by any means, that I can really kind of move beyond that oftentimes and not have those people keep showing up in my life. That they show up in a different way because I've changed, not because they've changed. So, John Aston has some prose that I love about this. And it's actually words to a song, but I'm not going to play it. But I'd love to share the words for you because it says, "We are the mirror. We are the mirror as well as the face within." So think about that. We're the mirror as well as the face within. We are tasting the taste of eternity this minute. So I'd like each of you to think about looking in the mirror and tasting eternity. We are pain. What cures pain? We are the sweet, calm waters that God calls forth. So as we look in the mirror, we look into our own eyes, we learn how to love what we see and forgive what we see. We learn to see the pain, and we learn to see God calling forth that calm water that soothes our souls. We also have another opportunity to look in the mirror and see someone else that irritates us, someone else that we judge, someone else that we love. Mirrors work lots of ways. So it becomes, I think, really important to think about that. And again, if you meet three jerks in a day, check the mirror. One of the opportunities that I've had, can we play that, the music right now? Sorry. I think I'm going to change. I'm going to go from the mirror to this, because one of the things that happened this year is because I'm kind of in a stuck place, not really willing to step over into that, wherever that is next. I was kind of taking a look at my fear in one hand, and looking, God told me to place love in the other hand, and he told me to take a, and I, there was a lot of love there. And he said, "Now look at your self-love." And it was this tiny little bit of light in the palm of my hand. And he said, "You see that? That's got to grow as big as that fear before I can walk you through this next piece." And what came along was this piece of music. I'm going to read you the words. It's by a woman named Karen Taylor Good, and it's called "I Am a Gift." And it says, "I am a gift, no matter what age, no matter how I look, no matter what I weigh. I am a gift, and I promise every day, when I look in the mirror, I'll say, I am a gift. I'm a gift I've loved really, really well. I've lived And every year I've lived has a different tale to tell. I've made mistakes, I have some regrets, but I promise I'll never forget. I am a gift. There may be times when I forget the truth about me, when it seems that time and youth are just marching on without me. That's when I need you to remind me. That's when I need you to find me and ever so gently remind me that I am a gift. I'm God's precious child. I was put here on this earth, but only for a while. So I make this vow, and I say it with love. I am perfect and whole and enough. I am a gift. So I think I've been a much better person since I've been willing to look in the mirror and let some of this steep in. It's not always easy, but go ahead and start it. And she's got a beautiful voice.
A gift, no matter what age, no matter how I look, no matter what I weigh. I am a gift, and I promise every day, when I look in the mirror, I'll say, I am a gift. I've loved really well, and every year I've lived has a different tale to tell. I've made mistakes, have some regrets, but I promise I'll never forget. I am a gift. There may be times when I forget the truth about me, when it seems time and youth are just marching on without me, that's when I might need you to find me and ever so gently remind me. God's precious child, I was put here on this earth, but only for a while. So I make this vow, and I say it with love. I am perfect and whole and enough. I am a gift. I am perfect and whole and enough. I am a gift. I am a gift. I am a gift. I am a
So it looks like it's time for another. I actually have to tell you, from the time God said yes, you're going. I have people who send me internet stories that are related and have lots of funny things, and I collect them over the year, and I kind of always open with something. And I was just shocked when I got, you can't use those, because I'd been packing them away, and I usually bring more than I need and pick the ones that I think you probably haven't seen, although most of you have seen them. But to have to use humbling moments for me is a little more difficult, but I think it's part of an important process. So this is a story from a couple years ago when I was leading Rhythms Pacific Redwoods, and music touches me a lot, and words and music touch me a lot. And yeah, for those of you that haven't been to Pacific Redwoods, it's in Aptos, California. It's about 3 miles from the ocean, but it's in this huge redwood forest, old, tall redwoods. And there's a beautiful rhythms field that's encircled, grass encircled by tall, tall, towering redwoods. So it's a very special, special place. And you know, the rhythm of rhythms, and we get quiet at the end, and we have the same issues about trying to get everybody to attend, and I usually have a few folks I can count on to be there to support me and keep the kids in line and that kind of thing. And I had come across this music that I absolutely love, and the title of it is "O Breathe Us Deep," and it's by Diane Bardwell, and it's a very moving song. But the bottom line is it's "O breathe us deep, breathe us strong, breathe us full, O breathe us home." And so there's a lot of ways to work with this and the breath, and everybody's moving around. I give everybody instruction, and they're part of the rhythms field is a little bit damper than it should be, so I move everybody kind of up closer to, not in the center of the circle, but just so they can get out of the dampness. And I am centered in God, holding hands, very clear about right foot, left foot, because I have trouble with that sometimes. And all of a sudden, there's something going on in the circle that I cannot figure out. And I look across the circle, and people I know that would really be appreciating this are like, there's all this giggling happening, and there are like people bailing. Somebody over here is like vomiting. And I'm just like, and there, you know, there, and other people are kind of going. Finally, I stopped and I said, "What is happening?" People are like, walking away. I still think I can feel it. Well, the leech lines, I guess, had backed up, and that's why I was so moist. So in the middle of my extreme wonderful rhythms, where people were breathing deep. They were trying to be nice, and so we actually wound up. I mean, I, as a nurse, I think that's like really dangerous. We move, everybody's like wiping their shoes off. So we like moved over to the asphalt and had the rest of our rhythms there. But sometimes Diane plans and God laughs. That was one of them. I often have the good fortune to work with groups that are somewhat polar, and part of my learning has been to come up with other ways for them to get clear about their oneness. And so I oftentimes find myself in rooms with physicians and Western medicine folks, physicians, nurses, hospital people. And also I do a lot of work in wellness clinics, pain clinics, things like that. So I work with a lot of complementary alternative folks. And over the years, as I'm primarily working with them to design environments, I noticed some interesting things. They both have a great dislike and huge judgment about each other. But as I listened more closely, it was their judgments were very similar. One was very science-based, one was very healing and spiritually based, but the words and their dislike were very, very similar. I find that in our country with conservatives and liberals. And again, I believe there's a great mirror process going on for those groups of people. I use both traditional Western medicine and complementary medicine. In fact, I err on the complementary side, and I'll tell you about some not so good choices I made because of that. But and I am, as the client, this body has to do the communicating between the two of them because they won't talk to each other, okay? Now my physician wants to give me a prescription for everything, and my complementary practitioner wants to give me herbs, and they both want me to buy something, okay? You know, the physicians don't think the herbs work, the complementary practitioners don't think the pharmaceuticals work, and it's quite something. But that other comes with that mirror, and there's nothing more powerful for me as a consultant in a room to watch those two groups of people learn how much they have in common. And when they work together, how they can really benefit the health of a community. It's very, very wonderful and powerful work. It doesn't always work. The other thing I've learned over the years is people have to be ready for that. So I could work a very long time and nothing would happen in a room because of one strong, adamant person who was not willing to look at a third possibility. So I've done a lot of learning about readiness, and I learned that actually through Glenn's Lovers of Prayer, somebody in their talk mentioned. All right. Oh, that was in prayer prep, I guess. And what it's also part of some other practices that I'm involved in, but if you think about it, what I'm looking for is the tiniest solution that will have the biggest effect. I want to spend the least amount of effort creating that. And if I think about that, sort of like the mustard seed in the mountain, and when you work on those spiritual levels, it doesn't take a lot of energy to make shifts. So, let's see, how can I explain this a little differently? So I wait until the groups are ready, and that requires one of two things usually, a very powerful vision or a great deal of pain. Usually it includes a little bit of both. But someone willing to see a third way. You know, Einstein said no problem can be solved at the same level of thinking, that you must move it to the next level. Well, nature gives us a beautiful pattern for that, and that pattern is the spiral. And the spiral in nature is, if for those of you that are into geometry, it's called squaring the circle. For those of you that are into nature, it's called, if you cut a nautilus shell in half, a chambered nautilus shell, you'll see that beautiful E-curve of the nautilus. If you look at a flower, you'll see the E-curve. If you look at water going down the drain, it's that same beautiful geometry. And what I've learned, I didn't invent this, I've learned this from other people, is that little chambered nautilus gives us a very good example about it, how it lives its life. And it's a very tiny animal that begins to build its shell and its chamber, and it eats and it does what it needs to do, and it builds this beautiful chamber around itself. And then it continues to eat and it continues to grow. And at a certain point, as it grows, the chamber itself becomes too small. And it has to either choose to die or move into the next larger chamber. And when it moves into that next larger chamber, it's completely open to the rest of that big open space in the shell. And it's not until it finishes it building the next wall is that it's safe again, so that it can in fact then eat and grow and be safe from other animals. So each time it moves into a yet larger chamber, there's a great deal of risk involved, and there's a great deal of vulnerability involved. And I feel kind of like that's where I am right now. I'm sort of moving into the next chamber, but I'm not sure exactly how that's going. So one of the things that I've noticed is with that same geometry, in spaces that I create, just simply, let's see, we're going to go out, we're going to look at the stars tonight. So if you look at the Milky Way galaxy, it's that E-curve. If you look at a flower, same thing. We talked about the water. We talked about the chambered nautilus. And then if you'll look at the cowlick on a baby's scalp, it's also that same geometry. So it's the macrocosm and the microcosm. And spirit, God does this. It's God's language. And if you look at the curve of the double helix of the DNA molecule, it's also that same curve. So we'll get to see some examples of that here pretty quickly. But one of the things that I've noticed is if you put artwork in a room like this. Now, we have lots of nature around us, so we don't necessarily need to be reminded of it in a room. But how simple things can change. If you see the wave, I guess that's a wave on the wall over there. It's that same curve. It's something that we know at a cellular level. But if there's an image or two in the room that creates that, or if the chairs are set up in some sort of sacred geometry, the meeting itself is very different. So the intention that goes into the meeting, the space itself, has something to do that. Now, keep in mind, Mother Teresa did these things on the streets of Calcutta without any spirals in the room. Okay? So it's not about the pieces of geometry. It's not about the practices. But that E-curve is really about recovering our ability to love. And it's in images in nature, it's in images in cathedrals and churches. People, architects, have known this for years. And it has to do with that architecture of belonging that I was referring to last night. So the tiniest little solution to create the biggest effect. God, when I use my energy, where do you want it? Where am I not beating my head against the wall? Over and over, trying to get something to change, trying to do whatever, trying to get my friend to quit smoking, you know, whatever that is. Show me when to show up and what to do. I'm looking for things. So that's a sign for me. When does it feel heavy and cumbersome? When is it light and effortless and spirit-filled? And I can tell you, I've got some days. I call them my curmudgeon days, where it's, you know, nothing seems, and I have to kind of stop myself and go, what's going on here? I'm a little bit off. So God uses us in our tiniest moments. I'm going to go over one story that I don't think I've told this to any CFO group, but several years ago, I was, the one year in my life, I was sick. I was very sick. And I had an ovarian cyst. I was smart enough, and that's when I was using my doctor and my naturopath and trying to get the two of them to work together. And I was convinced that I could heal this on my own. I had people praying for me. I did everything I knew how to do, because what the doctors wanted to do is they wanted to do surgery. And I thought, if I could just get this kind of just evened out a little bit for a few years, I'd be menopausal and I could just forget about it, because the cyst would go away, because I didn't want surgery. I'm a hospital administrator, I'm a nurse, I know what happens, I don't want to do that. So I was referred to three different surgeons, and they all told me I needed surgery. And I said, thank you very much, and I went back to my naturopath and started taking flower essence and herbs. And I kept getting sicker and sicker. And I know enough what my symptoms are, but I would get really sick and then I would kind of get better. I would heal myself. And I did that for about a year and a half, at which I could only work about 50% of the time, but that was better as far as I was concerned than surgery. And then I was actually over at a vacation house that we built in Bodega Bay. I've mentioned that before. And had some friends with me, one of which happened to be a family physician friend. And I got up one morning and I hadn't been feeling well, but I usually motor right on through it. And I said, you know, I'm not feeling well. You guys go to the beach, do it. And they said, you look awful. Are you okay? And I said, I'm fine. I knew that if this doctor got a hold of me, he'd have me in the emergency room in 2 seconds. Go. So, long story short, I had peritonitis, the cyst had ruptured a couple of days before. Taken some of the bowel with it, so by the time I got into surgery, I was in surgery for about 6 hours while they rinsed everything out, and I was on antibiotics and had to go back in for a second surgery. But a lot to the story of being a nurse in a hospital, and when everything goes wrong that could go wrong did go wrong. And I showed up, for those of you that are whoever with a I lost a lot of blood. My hemoglobin was 6. They wanted to transfuse me with 2 units of blood, but I didn't want blood either. So I laid there, and it was hard to even think a thought. I couldn't even, it's hard to describe, but there, I was incredibly weak. Going to the bathroom felt like a trip to Japan and back. And I was very, very ill. And I went to sleep one night. They didn't have enough beds on the med-surg unit where they knew how to take care of you, the surgical unit. And they put, because I was a GYN surgery, they put me on a, in the OB unit where mothers have babies and all that. So in the OB nurses, they're very good. I'm really glad they do what they do, but they don't know a lot about surgery. And so I basically was caring for myself. Was very weak, kind of was in and out of consciousness, actually. Went to sleep that night and had a dream. And the dream was I was kind of out of my body, floating over a delivery room. And there was a baby in the delivery room. I'd been a nurse long enough to know that the baby was in trouble, and the baby was not, you know, the baby was probably gone already. And so in this dream, it's going to be hard to describe. And the reason I'm describing this is because I think it's an example of God using us in our most weakest state. The baby actually, I felt a presence. My experience of that presence is Jesus. And I felt some words, and the words were, "You don't need to do anything except let this little soul know that he's loved and his decision to stay or go is his. He just needs to know he's loved." And I thought, well, somehow all that happened. There were no words. It just happened. And I had my little dream and went back, woke up the next morning and was dealing with my own issues. And I said to the nurse, "By any chance, was there a delivery last night?" And he said, "Yes." She said, "Yes." And she said, "Yeah, we almost lost this baby." I said, "Oh, really?" So I said, "What was it? Was it a baby boy? Was it a baby girl?" And she said, "Oh, it was a baby boy." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Is he doing okay?" And she said, "Yeah, he's doing okay. He's even out of the NICU," which is the neonatal intensive care unit. One minute he was dead and gone, and the next minute he was... Now, that had nothing to do with me, and I want to be really careful about that. But again, the tiniest little thing can create the biggest effect. And that is what I believe the Bible teaches us when we're open. Now, if you had asked me, I've had many wonderful healing moments with myself and other people and Jesus. But I have never been so... mentally unavailable, I guess would be the best way to say that, and out of control, so to speak, myself. And I do believe that Christ is in everything we do, and that was a learning for me. So, Dana, if I could real quickly have you just do maybe 2 walking and being. We'll end with that so we can get out and see the space station. Being.